nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
All right, guys, well, then let's start. So you have syllabus, and so my name is Vlad Shalaev. I'm a professor at Electrical and Computer Engineering Department, and we're going to study with you this fascinating field of nanophotonics. As you can already see, so I'm wired, they're going to tape us. Perhaps you don't want to be late for the class, so not to disturb the recording. I certainly appreciate your feedback, so I really like when you ask questions. It helps me to see the level of your understanding and to adjust the level of my presentation to make sure that you really follow me. The field of nanophotonics, so here we go, is a very exciting one, and perhaps I need to explain what do we mean by nanophotonics. Of course, there are these two important words, photonics, which mean that we're going to deal with quanta of light, which are called photons, and the word nano, which indicates that we're going to consider interaction of photons with nanostructured devices. In other words, functional elements which have sizes on the nanoscale. Why it's all important? Why photonics and why nano? Well, because electronics, despite all this, all its accomplishments, and basically nearly all devices we have around, it's all electronics, it certainly has its own limits. Some people believe actually nano-electronics is running out of steam. There are fundamental limitations related to nano-electronics, which has to do with so-called RC delays. So with electronics, you never can process information faster than, well, let's say 100 gigahertz, or in other words, 100 gigabit per second. Whereas with photons, in principle, you can process information much faster, at the rate 10 to the 15 bit per second. So it simply has to do with the fact that the carrying frequency of light is 10 to the 15, and therefore the information band can be extremely large. So you can place by far more information and process it with much higher speed. So potentially photonics is by far more powerful means to process information and to use it for a new family of devices. You could think of this in very general terms, because a photon is, in a sense, an ultimate messenger to nanoworld and from nanoworld, because photons do not have mass, and therefore you can package information into a signal of zero mass and propagate it with the ultimate speed, which is the speed of light. Electrons cannot move with that speed. They do have mass. So photonics is essentially faster means to process information. And therefore, it's absolutely clear, this is a question of time, that eventually nanophotonics, although it's now a new emerging area, eventually will play an increasing role. I'm not saying that it's close to replace nanoelectronics, but it's certainly very close to be quite complementary for nanoelectronics. And let's say my vision of this for the next 10 years or so, photonics will empower electronics, make it faster and more efficient, more powerful. And maybe in future, although there are many, many problems to resolve, we could think of devices which basically completely built of based on manipulations of photons only. So, of course, it's much harder to manipulate photons because, as opposed to electrons, because photons do not have charges. It's so easy by turning on the field, to manipulate electrons. Photons do not have charges, and that makes much harder to make devices of photons. But there are some good ideas, which we're going to discuss within this course. So that explains why photonics, why photons, because they have zero mass, they have the ultimate speed, they are faster, you can process more information and at larger speed. Therefore, photonics has a great future, and probably at some point will complement electronics that's going on already now, or maybe even replace for some particular devices. Why nano? Well, that's clear, because we want to have our devices, let's say elements of which devices are built smaller and smaller, and that would allow us to put more functional elements on chips that would allow us to increase packaging and therefore eventually making more powerful devices. So we want to have as small functional elements as possible. Therefore, that explains why we have nano. So that's why nanophotonics is so important. Although I should mention right away, there is a fundamental problem with nanophotonics, which has to do with the fact that photons are indivisible spectral range, have a wavelength, let's say, roughly half a micron, 500 nanometers. Whereas we want to couple that wavelength to structures which are much smaller, let's say 5-10 nanometers. So you see that there are nearly two orders of magnitude mismatch in size of the wavelengths and size of a nanostructure to which we want to couple light. And that fundamental problem actually can be resolved by using special tricks, and specifically so-called plasmonic nanostructures, in other words, structures which are built of metals. Therefore, a big part of this course will be about plasmonics or metal optics, because this is the way to enable nanophotonics. This is the way to couple light to nanostructures. So after this introduction, which I hope convinces you that nanophotonics is really the future in terms of a new family of devices, in terms of the speed with which we process information, I guess we can really, we should be motivated to learn more how to do it. And before we really go to the subject of today's lecture, let's look at the syllabus, and let me clarify some ways we're going to proceed with this course. So you can, first of all, there is a web page for this course from which you can and should download lectures. So you don't have to take notes, you just should download a lecture. And every time I would place, let's say, two lectures for the following week. So you come to a classroom and just do your notes. So because some things you want to clarify for yourself, and when I'm discussing, then of course I provide by far more details than you can see just looking at the lecture. So, but at least it will save you some time in taking notes. So I will place lectures on this web page, and you should simply download it from there. I also will place their homeworks and then solutions. So we will, that will be a great help for this course, this web page. So as you can see in the syllabus, we will cover quite a number of topics, which include some introduction, basically Maxwell's equations. I reintroduce them, although I'm pretty much sure that you are familiar with Maxwell's equation, but I'll try basically to introduce all the basic notions, so you don't really need to know that much background to succeed in this course. And I also want to emphasize that I, instead of going into details for any particular topic we cover within this course, I would rather try to show you the big picture, like why the field is important, what are the direction the field goes to, what are the most essential components. And then if you get interested in any particular element of this course, you could study it within more special courses or just looking at the literature. I should say that there is no yet textbook on nanophotonics, and actually I'm working on one with my friends and colleagues from Stanford, Mark Braun-Gersma and Shan-Wei Fan. They teach the same course in Stanford, and actually we exchange by the slides and by the syllabus or by the program. So you're getting actually the same course or very similar course which is taught at Stanford. And with two of them, we are close to completing the textbook, but, well, you wouldn't be able to use it. I guess next time I will teach this course, I will have already a textbook. So the topics we cover within this course, it's, as I said, there's some introduction on Maxwell's equations, then very essential part of photonics, which related to photonic crystals. There is a family of devices which can be developed based on photonic crystals. It's basically elements which have a period, it's periodical structures with the period matching the wavelengths. Therefore, it's a very efficient way to manipulate light. And we will consider photonic crystals and photonic crystal fibers. It's a special type of fibers with a periodical arrangement of holes inside of these fibers. And I will show you that this type of fibers by far more functional than conventional fibers, and you can do lots of very interesting things with this type of fibers. And they already becoming devices. You can buy these photonic crystal fibers and use it in the lab. Like in our lab, we actually have photonic crystal fiber and use it in everyday basis, on everyday basis. I say, we will study these photonic nanocircuits. In other words, how you can really bring light to nanoscale and manipulate it to nanoscale and develop something like electronic chips, electronic circuits, but with photons playing the role of electrons. And the reason for that, why it's important, I have already discussed with you. So a big part of this course, I called it metal optics, or it's more fancy word which people use now. It's actually plasmonics or nanoplasmonics. In other words, it's structures built of metal components, which are small and which allow to focus light down to nanoscale and then manipulate it on the nanoscale. As I already mentioned, plasmonic structures, they really enable photonics on nanoscale. If you would use dielectric, you simply would have very low efficiency of light with nanostructures, simply because of these mismatching sizes which I was talking about. All right, and we will discuss in details how manipulate light with and control light with these plasmonic nanostructures. We'll spend some time considering plasmonic nanosensors, which is one of the most spectacular applications of metal nanostructures. They are already used for sensing biological molecules, for sensing things like cancer. They are already now going on tests on human beings, for example, at the Rice University, where they use these plasmonic nanostructures to diagnose and to treat cancer. So that's actually just one of examples. Other diseases include like diabetes and many other diseases. So these plasmonic nanosensors is a very important field, very important application. We will study near-field optics. In other words, optics on nanoscale. Again, it's new. It's not conventional. With conventional optics, you're always dealing with sizes and distances larger than the wavelengths. With near-field optics, we will look how you can control the light on nanoscale, how you can measure it, detect, manipulate. That's what this near-field optics is about. And finally, probably the most fascinating subject related to this course, which I call here metamaterials. It's a new fancy word, and probably, let's say, there is... In the whole field of optics, I would say there is nothing, and maybe in the whole field of materials, that's probably one of the most exciting areas now. Meta in Greek means beyond. When you say metamaterials, we imply that we study materials which have properties going beyond of those which you can obtain with naturally occurring materials. So in other words, by metamaterials, we mean materials which are designed and engineered and which have properties which cannot be attained with materials existing in nature. Those are entirely new materials. And a particular important class of these materials is materials which have negative refractive index and which kind of revolutionize the optics, because in conventional optics, refractive index, which plays such an important role because it controls the propagation of photons in media, and in conventional case, it's always positive. We will show that you can engineer metamaterials where refractive index is negative, and it opens a new class of phenomena. And it's all new, it's developing right now. Like in my lab, we are doing very extensive studies of these negative refractive index metamaterials. So you basically will study things which people working on right now, I mean, it's right this time, and by asking good questions and by thinking of this, you will have a chance to contribute. It's very important to appreciate a simple fact that science and engineering, top cutting-edge engineering, is done people like you. So, and you are exactly at that stage. You're working with your advisors now. You're working on your PhDs and master thesis. So you're the ones who basically determine the future of science and engineering. And we're going to discuss exactly this type of things within this course, which are the cutting edge of the current science and engineering. So that's kind of introduction to this course of nanophotonics. I listed here recommended textbooks. As I said, unfortunately, there is no single textbook which you could use, and it simply doesn't exist so far. There are a couple books on metal optics listed here on the bottom of the syllabus, and those are available again on the web. You can download them, so you will see them. A little bit about the rules and the way I will grade your success in this course. I'm sure you will succeed. So you see that 30% is homework, 30% is midterm exam, and 40% is final. When the final will actually have a form of your presentation, you will give lectures. And I teach in this course for the second time. And when I taught it the first time, I was really surprised how excellent lectures were delivered by students. Really excellent. What I do usually, I would pick up one of the newest article in Science on Nature, really what is hot and exciting, fascinates people, and ask you to give a lecture and to write a report. So there, when you look at the specific list of topics, the last five topics are actually written as students' presentations. So what I suggest you to form five groups. I don't know actually how many students we have. So let's say roughly 15 or so. Maybe 15 to 20, something like this. So it means that you have to have five groups consisting of three, four students. And each group will give a presentation. So it means that you probably will use like 20 minutes of that presentation. You decide how you split it between yourself. And also you will need to write a report, like basically some kind of critical review of this topic. Like what, how you understand it, why you think it's important, so what are the most exciting things about this. We will discuss it in more detail, how that report should look. And that will be actually your final. So the way you present your lecture and the way you write your report. So there will be, as I said, five groups reporting on these topics which I suggested. Some of them are extremely new, like this cloaking. It's basically just appeared. I mean, it's 2 weeks ago in Nature, there were papers on cloaking, and I know that it's going to be extremely hot topic. So we're going to discuss it in this course. So now it's your choice. You can form groups and pick up the topic. So let me know that, let's say, we are a group of that particular persons, and we would like to pick up that particular topic, okay? So the sooner you do it, the better. So then, because I'd like to know, let's say, within a couple of weeks, who's going to speak on what particular subject. I travel extensively, and there will be some days when we don't have lectures. So therefore, I put it specifically days when we have lectures and what topic we're going to cover during that lecture. So please follow closely this. Make sure that you don't show up when, unfortunately, I'm not given a class, or let's say, be aware when and what we're going to study. Perhaps you also will need this syllabus to know when you don't need to tape me. All right, I guess that's any questions related to syllabus, to the course? Yes, Gia?
First 2 weeks of September, don't we have class?
If there is no class, then we don't have it. So which probably means that I will be somewhere, I guess I will be in Manchester, in the UK at that day. So therefore, therefore I'm saying it is important. Pay attention. Yes?
So if we have to make a group, so there's only one person?
No. Everyone in the group should present. You just split your presentation, like let's say 20 minutes each. So one will give introduction, another, well, some main part. So you decide how. And for me, it will be absolutely important the way you present. That because that I will see how well you understand it. As I said, you're going to cover the hottest topics. And the level of your presentation basically will define to a large extent your final grade. And I expect you to give not just good, not even very good, but absolutely excellent presentations. Because presentations are critical for all your career. It's one part, another part, it really would tell me how well you understand it. And in addition to presentation, you also should write a report, basically describing the subject, but in your own words, and providing some critique of that particular subject which you're going to talk about. It's, I don't know, it's 5-10 pages report. Again, you do it together. So it implies you still could have different grades because the level of your presentation could be different. Yes?
So if the group does not have the introduction like that, if the 5 different topics are okay too, or you have to formal long presentation for group for 5 people?
I'm not getting you.
So you can, the 5 people present the 5 different project, but it's concerned to related to the same question like that. If 5 people to...
It's probably not going to be 5. It's by looking at how many you are. Probably 4 people presenting a particular topic. You have 75 minutes to present. So it means you divide it by 4, so you have, let's say, between 15 and 20 minutes each for your presentation, which quite a period of time. So I would perfectly see how well you presenting and how well you understand the subject. And since the level of presentation could be different, it doesn't imply that everyone will get the same grade. But the report will be one single report. You decide between yourself how you write it. Does it answer your question?
My idea is to make a group is important, or just the 5 people or 4 people is individual is okay too? Should we make a group?
You decide yourself.
Okay.
I'm not going to impose on you like you should do it with that particular. You decide it between yourself. All right, any other questions? Grades is not most important in this course. Try to appreciate the field because that's really a very, very exciting field. I mean, I know grades are important, but if you do a good job, you probably will succeed. Any other questions? Yes?
Is it possible we have 2 weeks for one group to cover all this kind of group, because I think these books are not easy.
I don't encourage you to read all these books. That would not make sense. Let's say some particular small pieces of material which we're going to cover are in those books. You don't need them, actually. I mean, if you want to go into more details, you can look at those books or particular parts of those books. None of these books listed there has all this material. So as I said, we don't have really a true textbook for this course. So that also makes it kind of unique. That's why they're taping me now, because there is no actually such a course available. So I know only 2 places where this course is taught, at Stanford and us, and they want it to be available for a bigger audience. That's why they're taping it there. So these textbooks cover only small pieces which kind of will show we discuss within this course. But by no means they cover the whole course. And I don't expect you to read all these books. You have other things to do. You need to do research. Okay, other questions?
Can I download a video from a webpage?
Say it again?
Can you download a video from a webpage?
Oh, I don't know, actually. Is it going to be on the webpage eventually?
Yeah.
yeah, as soon as they'll be up on the nano hub as soon as we can turn them around, which maybe a couple of days. But
okay, you mean you will place it lecture by lecture?
Yes.
Okay. There is nano hub that's organized by NCN, Network for Computational Nanotechnology. It's a big center funded by NSF. And the idea of this center is actually to share knowledge and some codes, modeling with a very broad audience. So they have nano hub. Anyone can go there and see this. So actually, this course will be available now for a very, very broad audience. So other questions, comments? All right, so then let's start. And today we, again, I already acknowledge contribution of this, my colleagues and friend from Stanford. So this is just some pictures representing particular parts of our course. We will study them within the course. So this structure is called bullseye, for example, and we think here that you can concentrate light within this hole, which can be extremely small, much smaller than the wavelength, and the whole energy would be concentrated there. So this is a plasmonic waveguide, which again could be extremely small in size, and you can guide light along this waveguide. This is photonic crystal made of these blocks, and which allows also to manipulate light in a very efficient way. This is the way you can make a waveguide within photonic crystals and turn it around at 90 degrees without actually losses, without much losses. So I that's just like illustration of what kind of fascinating things we're going to consider. We did go through the syllabus. Okay, this is the web page where you can download lectures and before actually lectures, I said. Here is my mail. I have two offices, one in the MSCE and one in Bourke. Usually when I teach Tuesday and Thursday, you can find me in my office in MSCE. A lot of time I'm in Bourke. So the office, the official office hour, it's Tuesday from 2 to 3. But if you have questions, you can stop by other time too or send me email. So this is a good textbook which describes photonic crystals. It's not a textbook, but it's pretty good. That's I would recommend, which is a part of our course. Well, you can have this book. It's available on the web page, as I said, so you can simply download. Although it's just a collection of chapters. It's not really a textbook. Again, it's not perhaps that convenient for studying. That's we discussed already. Great. Well, as I said, the first part is basically we will recapitulate Maxwell's equation and describe some basic properties of Maxwell's equations. Specifically, we also review major classes of materials such as insulators, semiconductors, and metals. And we consider nano and microstructures. When we speak of microstructures, we imply that the size of structures is comparable to the wavelengths. In most cases, we speak of the visible light, and the wavelength in the visible is just a fraction of a micron. Okay, and they, turns out, interact quite differently with light when you compare it with bulk, in other words, structures which are much larger than wavelengths, or with nanostructures, which are much smaller than the wavelengths. So those are three classes of objects in terms of size, their sizes, interact with light in a very different way. So the second part, of course, will be on these photonic crystals, which I mentioned. It's basically periodically arranged structures with the period matching the wavelengths, which allows to interact with light very efficiently and make very fascinating things. So, and for this part of the course, this Ioannopoulos textbook is a good one. So that's probably the only textbook which covers at least a certain part of the course. For all other parts, I cannot name any single textbook. And this plasmonics and nanophotonics is actually the most important part because, as I said, plasmonics enables nanophotonics. In other words, it makes possible to focus light to nanoscale and to manipulate on nanoscale. So, and we will consider these different components of this nanophotonics, including near-field optical microscopy, extraordinary transmissions through holes which are much smaller than the wavelengths, and this fascinating metamaterials, optical magnetism, negative refractive index, the so-called perfect lens, which allows imaging with sub-diffraction beyond the diffraction limit. And the very new things which people just started to discuss, this cloaking objects, it's how make objects invisible. And many things which looks almost like a fantasy or like a dream comes true, it has not come true yet, but at least it looks like in principle it's possible. And that's also we're going to discuss. Well, again, this is the structures, and this just explains where the structures come from. So there are some references to these fascinating structures. Let me spend some time on the motivation of this course. So materials are very important. And therefore, if you look at the history of humans, we call even big periods in history like Stone Age or Iron Age. And now we call Silicon Age. And I put here maybe the next coming age we would call it metamaterial age, because as I said, silicon nanoelectronics is absolutely great, but there's still, it also has certain limitations. Metamaterials bring new things into the area, although it's still under discussion. It's not like what's happening right now. It's more science than engineering, but things develop so fast now that basically today is science, tomorrow it's engineering. So, and as I pointed out, that of course people do understand how important materials, for example, when people realize how important stone, so the life changed, and then iron came, and which resulted in many things in history, including wars, for example, which we would like to avoid. And with silicon, of course, the whole electronic is now based on silicon. But the things which are going on now, scientists actually can design and engineer materials which do not exist in nature, with properties going beyond of anything which you can find in nature. That's actually the signature of nowadays science and engineering. Well, we will focus on optical properties, and I explain why it's particularly important, because of the unique properties of photons. And I've already mentioned that wonderful things can happen when the size of structure is comparable to the wavelengths. Because in this case, the interaction, because you have this matching in sizes, the interaction of such structures with light becomes extremely efficient. And photonic crystals is a very good example of that. In this case, you just periodically reproduce the structure which is comparable to the wavelengths. And the interaction in this case is extremely efficient. Well, the question arises, how small can be elements which provide certain functionality and still interact with light? So as I said, when objects become smaller and smaller, when they are much smaller than the wavelengths, unless you play particular tricks, they don't interact much with light. They're too small for that. And as I mentioned already several times, metallic nanostructures which support collective excitations of electrons called plasmons turn out to be this enabling tool. They allow the interaction with light on nanoscale. So, and therefore, when people believe that the diffraction actually sets the limit, it turns out it's not the case. When you use these smart metamaterials, say plasmonic nanostructures, you can go way beyond the diffraction limit. You can image objects much smaller than the wavelengths. You can focus light to the spot much smaller than the wavelengths. All these things became clear very recently. It's all development, let's say, last 10 years or so. But the optics, which is one of the oldest fields of science, which exists for several centuries, I mean, the common belief was for all these centuries that you cannot beat the diffraction limit. Well, fortunately, it's not the case. We can indeed beat the diffraction limit. And the way to do it is actually to use these plasmonics. In terms of designing these materials, you have lots of parameters to play with. I mean, you could make a particular shape. Let's say epsilon here is a dielectric permittivity, which characterizes the efficiency of interaction of your material with light. We will consider in more detail what is epsilon. So you can take a material and play with its shape. It turns out that shape strongly affects optical properties. You can make different shapes. You can place them in a different host. You can arrange them in a different fashion periodically, or you can make some odd shapes. And in all these cases, you would have very different properties. And it turns out that one of the biggest challenges in science now, you would not probably able to guess it, it's not fabrication, it's not characterization, it's so-called inverse design. And just and it's again, it happened within just last few years. DARPA, I mean, you know, these defense funding agencies, which provide the biggest funding of science in this country and probably in the world, they realize now that the bottleneck, the most important thing, is so-called inverse design. What I mean by this is the following. You typically, the way you model things, so let's say you design things, you say, okay, let's have a particular parameters for my system. Let's say I arrange my material of some blocks, of some elements of particular size with particular material properties. And then you calculate what kind of functionality you would get in the end. But it turns out it's never the one you want. So, okay, that's not what I want. You change the parameters again. You're just applying your intuition. You would get another output. But every run takes, let's say, several hours, and a cluster of computers, like thousands or hundreds of CPUs. And you run every time. You put new parameters. You get new output. But this is so-called direct way of modeling. It's not efficient at all. So the way people trying to apply now, it's so-called inverse design. You completely change the situation. You say, I want to have that functionality in the end. What are the parameters, what are the building blocks should I use to provide that functionality? It's a typical inverse problem, which are ill-posed from the point of mathematics. They're extremely hard to do. And there are now new codes, new algorithms for this inverse design. You might heard of some of them, such as genetic algorithm. There are many. You basically, the code itself teaches itself when it runs through simulation. And if it goes in the wrong directions, there is certain feedback. It comes back, it changes the parameters, and then doing again this calculation. And by having this feedback, you can do this inverse design or so-called adaptive algorithm. If you ask me a single thing, what is the most important now in science, I would say to develop this inverse design algorithm. Because fabrication-wise, we can fabricate nearly anything. So, but to think of devices which have new functionality and to find out the particular material, I mean design engineered material which would provide that functionality, that's the true challenge. That's extremely hard. So, and that's the way actually we do. You take these small blocks and you say, with certain dielectric activity, what arrangement should I take to provide the, okay, I have a material with functionality. And it turns out that when this calculation, what in the end, it absolutely goes beyond your intuition, even the wildest one. Because you look at this and people do no type of calculation, no way I would, but you guess there that the structure should be such to provide this functionality. So in other words, this inverse design algorithm go by far beyond any intuition. So that's very another important thing. We, unfortunately, there is no even such course, so they never teach it, but I hope that it's somebody is developing them now. Like we in our just working on this type of thinking, inverse design. And I know that in our lab point, because they're just in other labs also people working on this, that's lab, but that's very young-tongue, very important. Okay, so now to the Maxwell's equation. As I said, I'd like to briefly reiterate them with you because...